You're listening to the Investing for Kids by Kids podcast, where I interview guests from around the world about all things stocks, crypto, and business. I also share my strategies, advice, tactics, and more to help you become a better investor. I'm Timmy M., your host and the founder of Investing for Kids by Kids. Make sure to leave this podcast a good review so that I can continue growing my business and continue making episodes of this podcast. I am not a registered financial advisor. Any opinions expressed by me or the guests of this podcast are not a recommendation to make a particular investment. This podcast was created for informational and entertainment purposes only. So, hello Daniel, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have you on today.
Yeah, Timmy, thanks for having me. Excited.
I was thinking that we could start off with you explaining a bit about your background.
Well, my background is in numbers. I've always loved numbers since I was 9. And when I got to high school, I took an economics class and I said, you know, that's it. I want to do something with money. I got a chance to visit the New York Stock Exchange and I loved it. So, and then I worked in investment banking really is how I describe it. When you hear about companies that issue stocks on the stock market, when you buy them, investment bankers help put those companies so that investors can buy them in their accounts and, you know, invest for retirement or for other purposes. So that was my job for a while. And then I worked in venture capital, which is kind of similar to investment banking, except they invest in private companies, help them grow so they could go public down the road so that you and I could buy them for our accounts. So that's kind of really the basic groundwork of my background. But then I've also got into wealth management just 15 years ago, which is really managing money for people and helping them meet their financial goals.
That's interesting. So could you give me an example of the type of job that you as an investment banker might do?
So it's a great question. If you think of a company, and a company is private. So when a company is private, that means it's owned by some, and it's only owned by them, by many people, many different types of people, and not big chunks, but little chunks here and there. And the way that happens is that an investment banker can go to a private company and say, hey, I think that you are a great company, and I think that public investors will want to have a piece of your company so they can invest in it, so they can have retirement, so they can meet their financial goals. And then that company will agree. They'll say, hey, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And then I can use the money that I raise in the market to help it grow the company and expand it and hire key talented people to work for me. And that will even help the company grow even more. And then those investors would really benefit. So that is how an investment bank works. They are an intermediary between a private company and a public investor. So what that happens is that an investment bank is going to invest in a private company, buy their shares, and then the investment bank takes those shares and then sells it to the public. Public meaning you and I, but they also sell it to big investors, like institutional investors, and that's how they have mutual funds that they also sell to the public.
Could you explain venture capital and what that really is?
So venture capital, it's similar to investment banking, except It's kind of backwards. So in other words, like an investment bank invests in a private company to take them public, a venture capital firm does the same thing, except they're not taking them public. They're going to hire an investment bank to take their company public. So I'll give you a good example. I'm a venture capitalist and I see a private company that I love. They have a great product, they have a great idea, they have a great business. And so I want to invest money, private money, into that company to help them grow even bigger. And once they get to a certain size, then as a venture capitalist, I'm going to say, hey, I want to take your company public and I'm going to introduce you to an investment bank. That investment bank will take you public. So they kind of do the same thing, except an investment bank is not taking the responsibility of helping a company grow. They're really helping take a company public. A venture capital is investing in a company to help them grow and make a return when they take them public. Now that's a little confusing. It might be.
No, that's fine. That makes sense.
Okay.
And so
Very
one
cool.
question that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast is what they think about crypto. And I think this is a good point at which I could tie that in. So one thing that I have begun to see, and I've been watching very closely, is some companies, instead of becoming listed on a stock exchange, they're starting to list their own tokens. And those tokens represent ownership of that company. Basically, the same way a stock might work, but completely decentralized. And I was wondering if I could get, just give me your first thoughts and what you think about that.
First of all, it's very disruptive. And I'll tell you why. This is a great segue, Timmy, because if you notice, as I was explaining about investment bankers, venture capitalists, they are intermediaries between the private sector or the private company and the public investor. They're middle people, middlemen or women. But with decentralized finance, you can actually raise capital directly with the public. You can actually do that now with crowdfunding and crowdsourcing, but that is regulated. Cryptocurrencies are not really regulated. You could actually pretty much raise any kind of capital that you need directly from the public. And the reason why it makes sense is because of the blockchain technology that's behind the crypto, because you have a record of who owns the coin. And sometimes it comes with smart contracts and it comes with bonuses and all kinds of cool things. You find that in crypto and issuing crypto to raise capital, but you also find that with NFTs. You can buy NFTs and have special discounts or rewards for different products that the company offers. And what's great about that is that issuing a coin, you actually don't have to give up too much ownership and control every company like you would if you went through so many intermediaries, middle people, like a venture capitalist or investment bank. So I think that crypto is very disruptive in that regard and very good for companies who don't have access to investors like venture capitalists and other investors that invest in those kind of companies at that level. You can go right to the public. And the other thing too with decentralized finance is that it's its own banking system. So you can even do simple banking and offer financial services directly to people without having to go through bank. And I have to go through a long process of being approved for a loan or a mortgage or any sort of product. You can almost get approved instantly in some cases on certain decentralized blockchains. So it's pretty cool and pretty scary because we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the government might regulate it one day, but for now, not really.
Yeah. And so maybe we could move on from this topic. I'll do more episodes in the future on this. But I was thinking, it looks like we might have a recession pretty soon. So I was wondering if I could get your opinion on what to think about during recession, or what you may want to do to prepare for it, or even to profit from it.
So a recession is really when the economy shrinks. So that usually happens when the government prints too much money or spends too much money, or a little bit of both. And if you notice that during the pandemic, there was a huge stimulus program. In fact, there has been a huge stimulus program going on for the last, I would say 12 years now, 13 years or more, 14 years since the Great Recession. The government has been printing money and increasing the money supply, which makes money cheap. It puts it in the hands of large institutions who invest it in private companies, like I mentioned earlier. And those companies don't always do well. And sometimes the market values go through the roof anyway. But when prices start to go up, people can't afford to buy things, demand goes down, and then the economy shrinks. So what has happened is that over the last three quarters, the economy has shrunk. That's what they call a recession. Usually it's typically they call a recession when there's two quarters of consecutive negative GDP, which means gross domestic product. GDP is the measure of the economy. If GDP is growing, that means the economy is growing. If it's shrinking, that means we're headed into a recession. And so what happens in the recession is that stocks go down as well. People are worried about losing money. They panic when the markets go down and they start selling like crazy. And so if you are in a recession and you are an investor, you should probably be thinking about buying stocks. You should be doing exactly the opposite of what other people are doing, because that means that those stocks are cheaper. And I can tell you, through each recession, I have bought stock and I've never regretted it. All the stocks have done well, and I buy more when they go down. I do exactly the opposite that other people do. I buy stock when the stock is down, especially if it's a good company and I know they can recover. I'm probably going to buy their stock. As far as a consumer, you're talking about people getting laid off and struggling to pay bills, possibly having a hard time keeping up with prices and getting a job. That also could be a strain. And, sometimes people are out of work for a long time because of it. But I would say when you recover and people do get jobs, it might even make sense to start saving money for like an emergency in case you do lose a job in a recession. Another best practice is that you don't want to be in debt in a recession, because you don't really want to hurt your credit if you have credit cards or a mortgage or whatever type of debt, maybe even a car note. So it's good to have savings in case a recession happens. And I actually don't like to say emergency fund, because sometimes if you save for an emergency happens. I actually like to use the word contingency, which is basically means in case of, a job loss, or in case of an income loss for a business, or in case my car breaks down. It's a just in case fund, is what I like to say. Because if you have money to pay for it, then it's not really an emergency fund. It's just money that you saved for that purpose.
That's interesting. One thing, one really amazing quote that I heard from a financial blogger whose name I forgot is, the stock market is the only place where prices drop by 30% and people run out of the store. And so it almost seems counterintuitive that when stocks go down, you're worried and you sell. And when stocks go up, you buy because you get into the hype and drama of everything.
Oh yeah. That's a really great analogy to me. I mean, think about it. When some of your favorite stores have sales, oh, people are rushing in the door to buy those products, right? Stocking up. And we should be doing the same thing. The stock market is a marketplace. And when there is a discount, we should be running right in to buy those stocks, scooping them up as much as possible. And even as this podcast is going on, we are in a recession right now. Stocks are down. Some are down over 50%. Some are down less, but nonetheless, they're still down.
Crazy.
That hasn't been that low, really, since the pandemic. We've recovered some, but not really. So this is still a good time to buy stock. There's a psychology there. There's an emotion tied to the investment that really hurts people. That's why you hire a financial advisor, so you can take all the emotion out of managing money, so that a sound decision can be made. Because most people, when they sell at a loss, guess what? You can't really recover it because you've taken the loss. Kind of better hanging on to it. I mean, actually, an analogy that I use is that when there's a tornado or a hurricane outside, you don't run outside, you know, in the middle of a hurricane. You board your windows, you put tape on them, keep yourself safe, you make sure you have food. You know, you prepare for stuff like that. And hang on. So if you're in the market and you lose money, you're better off staying in, waiting until it recovers, than to sell.
Yeah. One tool that I've used is dollar cost averaging. If you had dollar cost averaged into the Great Depression, you would have actually made a profit after it rebounded. And it would have seemed kind of crazy then, but I've been setting these recurring orders. So dollar every day for however long this financial downturn is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it guarantees the lowest price at any given point, dollar cost averaging. And it's great. Great. That's a good strategy.
Right. So lastly, if people are interested, where can they point to? I know you're working on a digital finance series with your son. So if you'd like to talk about that, feel free to do so as well.
Yeah, so I started teaching my son financial management as early as 4 years old. We used to count quarters and pennies and dimes together. Me and his mother, we used to teach him how to count them, how to add them up. My son is really good at math, and I started to open an account for him so that he could start managing his own portfolio. He's been doing that now since he was 10 years old. And today he's 13, and his total return over the last 3 years is over 200%. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
And he's a lot, you know, he's a lot like you. I mean, he's into crypto. You know, he knows all about crypto, and you know, and he has his own ideas, his own philosophy. And I think it's great, because you know what, Timmy, they don't teach you stuff in school. They don't teach you how to manage money, they don't teach you how to build wealth. They just teach you, you know. They want you to read a book and tell you how to think or whatever, you know, but they don't teach you practical things. So I said, you know what? Let's keep this going. We'll do this on our own. I will teach you how to manage money. And it you know, he did so well that we said, you know what? We're going to do a course together. And so now he and I are doing a course together, and it comes out at the top of the year in January. So it's called The Incipient Investor. He made that name up. Incipient means someone who is smart and forward thinking. So pretty cool. So that course is coming out top of January. We might even do a launch around Christmas so that parents can kick the tires and see if they like it and enroll. Oh, and if they want to find out about it, they can sign up. If they want to find out about it, they can sign up on the mailing list on my website, which is www.evansandcompany.com.
And I'll include the link to that in the show notes below.
Cool. Yes.
All right. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed having you on.
Thanks, Timmy. It's great to be with you today. Thank you.